thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and I have a question for you. How would you feel if someone you love committed an unforgivable crime? Would you forgive them? Well, our next guest has written a new novel that looks at those questions and a whole lot more. Pleased to welcome back Jacqueline Michard to the show. She's the award-winning New York Times bestselling author. I guess the Deep End of the Ocean was her one of her first, or I think maybe her first book, and it was the first Oprah Winfrey Book of the Month Club book. And she's written many good books since then. And her new book, I just finished reading it, is titled The Good Son. What questions or comments might you have about forgiveness, for example? Questions for Jackie Michard about her writing or about the story? It's a wonderful book. I really enjoyed reading it, and it's going to be fun talking with Jacqueline Michard about it. Jackie, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
I'm so happy to be back in Wisconsin, even virtually. I miss my home.
I know, you're a Wisconsin product, and I guess I'm glad to hear your voice. Kind of sorry sometimes that you're not back in Wisconsin.
The book, however, is back in Wisconsin.
Yes.
The Good Son is set in a fictional town called Portland, Wisconsin, which is supposed to be Oregon, Wisconsin, which is where I lived before I left 10 years ago.
Yeah, and it is an amazing book. Today's the first day of its release. Just as an aside, what are those? I mean, you've written a lot of books. What are those first days like for you?
Oh, they're just nerve-wracking, Larry. you could be excited if you had a different personality from my personality. all I do is worry about, it's like your kid going to college. Now the book is out on its own, and it's going to sink or swim, and it has to earn its own living, and there you are, just sort of waving from the window and saying, there's nothing left I can do. I did my best.
oh my gosh. Well, I think in December, I get lots of emails from a variety of people, and Barnes & Noble sent one that had you listed as one of the, I think there were four books, as must-read books for 2022, and yours was one of them. So I thought, well, that's a good start.
Are taking that very seriously.
Well, it's a different book, and it the idea for it came from a conversation you had standing in a coffee line.
That's right. I was waiting. I was at a big writers' conference. I was waiting to give a speech, and the woman in front of me dropped her book, and I picked it up, and I said, "Oh, are you here for the conference?" And she said, "No, I'm here to visit my son. I come here and stay at this hotel every weekend. He's in prison nearby, and he's going to be in prison for a long time." And I thought, oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me why. But she did. She told me that he had killed the only girl he ever loved, his beloved girlfriend, since seventh grade. And he was only 19 at this point. And he was so messed up on drugs that he didn't even remember the crime. And she also told me, and this part really, I just couldn't forget it. She said she went to the cemetery one time to put roses on the girl's grave, and the girl's mother showed up, and she was terrified. The boy's mother thought, what's going to happen? And they had been friends at one time, or neighbors, and they ended up just with their arms around each other and crying. And the girl's mother said, "You're the lucky one, because at least you can still touch him, no matter what he's done." And so that was the inspiration for the story. But in my imagination and my writer's imagination, we have to mess with history and change it in every possible way. So there are dozens of twists and turns in this book, and it doesn't. Well, you read it. I'm so thrilled that you actually read it. That I know you always do your diligence, but you can testify to the fact that it doesn't end up the way that you think it's going to.
Oh, no, for sure. I'm just wondering, do you keep ideas like that kind of just filed away in your mind? Or do you write it, put it in a journal, or what do you do?
Well, all those things. This one, however, I would have never forgotten, no matter if I had written it down, because it just, I saw myself in that woman. I have 5 sons, and fortunately, you know, by the grace of the universe, none of them has ever been in trouble in any way except for aggravated parking tickets. But I could very easily see myself in that woman's position. And I had watched a TED Talk that was done by Sue Klebold, who was Dylan Klebold's mother, one of the Columbine shooters. And you could just tell that the audience was reacting to her when she pointed out that despite all the grief and the shame that they felt, that she and her husband felt and his brother, that she still loved Dylan. And that was inspiring to me because I started to think about it. How could you still love someone you knew was capable of something that was unimaginable to you? And I guess only a mother could do that because she would be the only one who would want to try.
Yeah. Maybe give us it'd be good, I think, to get the broad outline of the story, which kind of, in some ways, follows the experience you had meeting the other mother.
Well, yeah, it opens. I'm interested in the, as a writer, I'm always interested in the story behind the story, even when I'm writing the story. So the book opens at the time that Stefan, who is the convicted killer, is getting out of prison, and his mother is at the prison gates picking him up in northern Wisconsin somewhere. And the mother of the girl that he killed is also there, and she doesn't know what's going to happen in the parking lot that day. As it turns out, nothing happens, and she begins the process of trying to help him start his life over again in a community and in a culture that wants no part of him. And in fact, the girl's mother has started an organization to protest dating violence as an overlooked societal problem that doesn't get the same attention as the ordinary, what we imagine as domestic violence. And actually, it's a really good idea. I'm saying this editorially. That kind of thing, that kind of organization would really be a good idea for because it is an ignored phenomenon that goes on among high school and college couples often. But it follows Stefan's efforts, his extraordinary efforts to try to be accepted again and to try to prove that he is someone worthy of people's trust, and that other people like him also want to make amends for the wrongs that they have done. But Thea goes through enormous rejection. She loses her job virtually over this incident. She loses friendships, and there's even a schism in her family.
Yeah, it's really... I wondered, I mean, you tell this so well, and as you're writing about her, Thea, well, the whole process to me, I thought, man, you must have done a lot of research or interviewing of people who were in that kind of situation. But did you?
I talked to a couple of people briefly. Neither of whom I could ever contact again because they were put in touch with me by someone who they would only talk to me on the condition that I didn't know who they were. So I don't even know if they were telling me the truth, but I would talk to a couple of women, one of whom had a son that she described as a good son but not a good boy, that it was virtually an expected thing. And among his friends, it was a status symbol almost to go to jail, and that it was expected that he might go to jail at some point in his life. And the other one was more like Thea, who had raised, gently raised, only child, who was never showed any signs of violence, never showed any signs of criminality, but yet had done something, not the something that Stefan was convicted of doing, and ended up in a situation that his family never expected. And as Thea says in the book, she's a college professor. She's a college professor at a college that would be Edgewood if I had used the true name of it, but instead is called Thornton Wilder College. And she says that nothing in her life had prepared her for anything except moderate good fortune. And now she's cast down into this abyss she can't recognize herself and she can't recognize her son or her husband and the life that they live now.
Jacqueline Michard, our guest today, her new book just released today, The Good Son. She'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We will have you join in with your own questions at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and my guest is Jacqueline Michard, and her latest book, The Good Son, is just out today. The book deals with the aftermath of a violent death and how the families and the community deal with their grief, their anger, their fear. It's an amazing book, and as I'm sure you haven't had a chance to really read it yet because it's just out today. We'd love to hear from you anyway. What are your thoughts about forgiveness, for example? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Jacqueline, let's talk about relationships for a minute in the book. Certainly, the mother Thea goes through. I don't know how I should call this, but she goes through such a range of emotions in her relationship with her son. Jackie, are you there? Oh, we're having a little technical difficulty here right at the moment. But I bet that she will get that sorted out, and she'll be with us in just a minute. The book. Oh, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I was trying to be good and be muted, and I over-muted myself. I can't believe that I'm still making technical mistakes after 1,000 years of being on the radio 1,000 times. Anyway, the mother in the story is, I was able to identify with her rapidly changing emotions because I tried to picture myself in that situation. I have 5 sons, of my own. The oldest of them is 35, and the youngest of them is 16. And I tried to imagine my way into what it would feel like to have to live with the fact that your son was responsible for a horrifying death, even if it was accidental or unintentional. It would be something that would blot out the rest of all the good memories in your relationship, as it tends to do when people always say, but so-and-so lived a good life, you know, and that one bad act is going to overshadow everything. And indeed it does. It does do that. And Thea feels, as I would feel, both surprised and hurt and also resentful because she didn't do anything wrong. And now here she is, her friends are deserting her, with the exception of one friend, and her job is in jeopardy, and all around her she sees people who don't want to know her or her family anymore.
Yeah, and there are a number of relationships in the book that, I don't know, they've gone from love to obsession, maybe?
That's absolutely the case, and I think that primarily the way that the boy, the young man, felt about his girlfriend. She had a life. She went off to college in one of the Wisconsin campuses, a fictional one, and made friends and got involved with all kinds of different things and different people. And he felt her slipping away from him. And she was really the only thing in his life that he really, truly cared about. And that naturally leads, in part, to the belief that if she was trying to slip away from him, that maybe caused him to snap.
Yeah. This whole business of ownership, and you mentioned it earlier, the dating and violence, maybe talk about this this idea of ownership.
Well, I got very interested in the subject of dating violence in high school and with college-age young women and men because, boy, that happens a lot more than we imagine it. Domestic violence in married couples or domestic partners who are adults is one thing, and that is starting to get the kind of attention it deserves, but people don't think of the fact that sometimes those relationships in among younger dating partners get really skewed, and there's this whole dimension of when I was starting the research for this book, I read a conversation that a friend of mine's daughter had with a roommate of hers who said that her boyfriend loved her so much that he would pull her hair if he thought she was looking at another boy, if they were out dancing or at a bar. And she saw that as a sign of his love. And I thought, that's so creepy that he would, yeah, he would treat her like a piece of property. And yet, you know, that's not uncommon.
Yeah. You even talk, I think at the end of the book, you mention a friend of yours who actually deals with relationships, but she was describing a relationship with her own husband about not wanting her to travel so much anymore. And here
right.
She is. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go. Yeah, that's exactly right. Of course, when something is our own problem, we can see it very well in other people, but not as much in ourselves. And it's something that I guess it goes both ways. And women sometimes feel that same level of possessiveness, but maybe not of ownership as much as it seems to go the opposite way from men to women.
Allison from North Prairie emailed. She's wondering if you brought faith into the book at all. For her, her idea of forgiveness is intertwined with her faith.
I mostly talked, the organization that Stefan founds in the book, when he comes out of prison, he wants to do something not only to improve his own life, but to allow other people like him to make amends to the people who have been affected by their wrongdoing. So he starts an organization he calls the Healing Project, in which people who have done wrong come up with an idea of something they might do to not to change things or to make up for things, but to try to make things better for the people who have suffered as a result of their actions. And it sort of catches on, and people get more involved in it on both sides. And it's not faith-based, though he and his mother are part of an Greek Orthodox congregation, and that in part sponsors his work. It's not faith-based, and it's not really like the Forgiveness Project that exists in real life, in which felons and the victims of the crimes are reunited in an effort to allow the people who have been wronged the freedom of forgiving the perpetrator.
Yeah. You know, and as part of that Healing Project, if there was talk with victims' families. It was difficult to read about what the victims' families had to go through and how violent their emotions were. Was that difficult? And they seemed very, very real and raw to me. Was that difficult to write for you?
It is. It's always difficult for me to write about things that are painful authentically. I have to, you know, I'm not immune to those strong emotions, and I'm not immune to the pain and the devastation that those things cause. And to describe those things so minutely is painful. And you know, I mean, I upset myself and I can't sleep, but it makes me cry. I mean, what a cheap date, right? To cry over your own writing. But those things are very close to the bone. However, readers, people who read stories like this are very smart and they're very sensitive and they can spot it if it's phony.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly was not phony at all. You explore parenthood a lot in your work. And the husband, Jep, he's kind of a minor character, it feels like. What kept him from being perhaps more important in the story?
I guess it's because I have a bias. And the bias is that when a kid goes wrong, when something happens, it redounds more on the mother than the father. And maybe that's not fair, but it somehow seems that when a parent is found wanting, a mother is expected to be a great many things. She's expected to be, you know, not just a provider or a moral force in a kid's life, but the primary shaper of that kid's character. And so I think that it was my belief that would fall more heavily on Thea than it would on her husband, that he would, and I just wanted that to be another way in which she was isolated.
Hmm. Yeah, that is, I think, a pretty good point. I was trying to put myself into the shoes of the parent as well as I was reading this, and I'm almost convinced that it you're right. That, I'm sad to say, in some ways, I'm sad to say that that you might be, you're probably right. This whole area of the community, the community's reaction, even the next door neighbor who they've known forever, reaction and how the community deals with something like this, because after all, they did go right back to the community. He came, Stefan came back to the community, and they were still there as a family. Talk about the community and its reaction. And is it, do you think it's a typical kind of reaction?
I do think it is, and here's why. I think that people tend to, there's nothing that makes you feel, oh, how do I put this delicately? I don't think I'm going to be able to put it delicately. There's nothing that makes you feel better about the job you've done as someone else going wrong who you know. I mean, there's nothing that makes you feel more secure in what a great marriage you have, except when someone else's marriage fails or something like that. And so there is a certain, I don't know if you want to call it Schadenfreude, in the way that people viewed Thea's misfortune. Because in part, she was, you know, she's a attractive mother of a successful kid, and her husband is a football coach, and they were looked up to in the neighborhood. So in a way, to have them fail so spectacularly made other people feel pretty good about how the mighty are fallen. I've experienced this to some degree in my own life, that surprisingly, when you encounter a misfortune, there are many, many people who feel compassion and empathy for you, but as many other people who feel like, well, okay, pride goeth before a fall.
Hmm. Yeah. Susie emailed, just to mention that the need for dating violence organizations is there, and she wanted to mention the Cleary Center. There's a parents' crusade to educate people on dating violence, and Cleary, as in C-L-E-R-Y, clearycenter.org. You can find it there if you're interested in learning more about it. And I guess, you know, as we were saying, I guess it's, I was trying to think back to my own dating times as a young person, and there were certainly times I felt anger or maybe even jealousy, and I don't recall exactly how I responded to those things, but I'm sure there are probably times when I didn't respond as well as I could have. Or should have. Let's put it that way.
It's interesting because it, I don't know whether guys, I mean, I know that I'm trying to teach my own sons, as my husband is, how to respond effectively and sensitively to negative emotions. But I don't know if a lot of kids, a lot of boys learn that growing up. And there also is this feeling that I know that I know is true, that by making a decision, you know, to break up with you or making a decision to dance with another boy at a party or something like that, that the girl is somehow disrespecting you. And it that I remember a great friend of mine once, in Madison, actually said, women have a whole palette of emotions. Their emotions run the gamut from A to Z, and men's emotions run the gamut from A to B. We're either really, really happy or we're mad.
Oh, my gosh. This, you know, there are so many different threads. This is going to be a great book club book, by the way. I can imagine how many book clubs are going to be picking this book up, because there are, you've got redemption, you've got forgiveness, you've got rehabilitation, and obsession, for sure.
There's a lot. There's all kinds of dimensions of obsession in this book. In fact, the mother, Thea, the main character, that's even her sort of, as a literature professor, that's even the area of her expertise, is writing about women, in fictional women who are obsessed, and or who are the object of obsession. And there is, you know, there's one part in the book, and I can't think of right where it is right now. You'd think I'd be able to. But when she talks about how the great love that you feel for someone can really click over into that kind of dangerous and lonely focus that becomes obsession. But even when it does do that, the love that inspired it is never wrong. It's the way in which the love is expressed that can turn bad.
Yeah, it's and there are so many, and we're not just talking. Well, the obsessions. There are other characters in the book that are involved in obsessions. I don't want to get into too much, but there's a lot going on in this book. By the way, what would you like what do you hope your readers take away from your book?
I wanted to write a story that was about empathy. And when I think of it, of readers having empathy for Thea, in other words, readers being able to put themselves in her shoes.
Yeah.
Not very comfortable shoes to wear. Not really Uggs. They're a terrible burden for her to be in the life that she never expected. The challenge is to feel empathy for someone who you might pity other than than admire.
Yeah.
And it's easy to feel empathy for someone who is a straight up hero or a star, but not someone who has as many doubts and fears as Thea has.
It is wonderful book. There are so many things. We could talk on for a long time, but we are out of time. Jackie, it's such a pleasure to talk with you. I hope the book does well. Hi to your family, Chris, and everybody, and thank you
so much, and give Madison a hug for me.
Will do. Thanks, Jackie. Jacqueline Michard, our guest, her latest book is The Good Son. Take a look. As I said, there are probably going to be a lot of book clubs taking up this particular book. Tomorrow we look at the 50th anniversary of the Wisconsin Sea Grant, and then on the talk with a wildlife rehabilitator about lead in birds and other animals. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.